Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio.
That's myfaithradio.com.
And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. I'm awfully glad to be spending this time with you. I've got the beautiful and amazing Queens of the Roundtable coming up in this hour versus Guide Talk, which we had last hour. I want to thank Dr. Peter Kapsner and Tiger McLuhan for coming in for Guide Talk. This hour will be absolutely wonderful, as well as we are going to talk to the ladies. And any question you might have, let us know by text 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We've got Michelle, Rosie, and Rebecca in studio. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Bill. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you.
Good.
Now, let me take a break, 60 seconds, and then we'll come back. I got my first question all queued up for you. Again, if you have a question you'd like us to discuss, 877-93-FAITH or 877-933-2484. Be back in 60 seconds.
Life is not like a GPS. You can drive different cars and go at different speeds, but there's no alternate route to where you want to go. Just one. This road is not the smoothest pavement, but it's the most fulfilling ride. Sometimes it's foggy, but there's enough light for what you need. And it's not the busiest road, but the goal is to make it so. All of life's wrong turns recalculate to here. The way, the truth, the life. Let's ride together. Connecting faith to life, Faith Radio.
Faith Radio can now be heard on the FM band in all of our markets. People are hearing relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching in crystal clear, static-free signals and growing in their faith every day. You can visit myfaithradio.com to see the network locations and the FM frequencies for each city. Enjoy a hope-filled message today by listening to Faith Radio in FM.
Welcome back. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We've got the amazing and beautiful Queens of the Round Table. We like to think of that as the girl talk portion of the show. We had just had Guy Talk, and I'm awfully glad that I'm being joined in studio by Rosie and Michelle and Rebecca, and we're going to chat about a number of things. Now, you're all moms, so tell me what it's like to be a mom.
Oh, my goodness. Who wants to start? Who is the most?
You're the freshest.
You don't sleep a lot.
You don't sleep a lot.
That's what I've learned. I may never sleep again. But it's a combination of all the feelings all at once, and it's more than you ever thought. Not just you, Bill, but anyone.
Yeah, don't look at me when you say that.
And I find I'm understanding what it means that God is a father now that I am a mother.
Okay.
And just a lot of different ways you understand what he speaks of in Scripture, the love that he talks about, the sacrifice that he talks about, the frustration that he talks about. You start to get it just a little bit more. And I'm still in the early stages, so I'm still learning. But those are some of the things that are being heightened and emphasized to me right now.
Well, and I have to come alongside that and say that not sleeping well doesn't end when your children are fully grown. It still goes on. That there are moments my son is leaving overseas for a summer internship program in the Eastern Bloc. You know, I mean, I know things have changed, but you know, I mean, it's, you just, but I also have to say, I think that there are those moments as a mom that you feel like, I feel like there's humor, you know, in sort of the, now you know how I feel. That's what the Lord is saying. Like, yeah, so that's what I've been trying to, you know, show you. And it's a really baptism by fire. I mean, as far as trying to understand how to raise individual children who are wired so differently than each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, in a kind of funny way, the first time the Lord helped me hold my tongue and not say what I wanted to say to my kids, I'm like, oh, you are real, because I wanted to say that, and you held my tongue, and you gave me wisdom, and you gave me a compassion I didn't know I could have. This is when they were a little older, you know, not when they're babies. But yeah, as they age and they challenge you more, the wisdom of God, I need to rest in it. I look to him for everything.
It's true.
In my parenting now.
It's a nonstop series of letting go. Like you just have to let go and have faith, and then just, you know, and I am such, the temptation for me is, I think Alistair Begg was talking yesterday about, you know, where your sort of Achilles heel is, for lack of a better term, you know, as from a faith standpoint, what you rely on when you get fleshly driven. And I get into micromanaging out of fear, you know, and it's the worst thing as a parent. I mean, it just doesn't help anybody. So, yeah.
I love that honesty. That's really, really good.
Yeah. Expectations are a weird thing. I think you have an idea of what life is going to be like, of what your kids will be like, what you'll be like as a mom, what, you know, maybe you learned from your mom, what your mom was like. And yet life is a lot different than you expect.
Is.
And you kind of have to let a lot of that go and just say, all right, Lord, whatever you have in front of me for this day, I'm going to surrender to you and let it be to your glory, because I don't know what's going to happen. And if I try to arrange things the way I think it should be, I'm probably going to end up disappointed and frustrated and not learning and appreciating this moment that it could be beautiful, but it's not what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and where do we get those expectations from?
That's a good question.
Social media, from TV shows. I mean, Rebecca, you probably didn't, but Brady Bunch. Right? I mean, I didn't grow up.
Alice bringing out banana splits to the kids when they're on the teeter totters. It's like, where's my Alice? Where's my banana split? And it's not happening.
Right? It's not happening. So these expectations of what family, Waltons, you know, families looked like, they were so not what was happening in our little house in, you know, Mundelein, Illinois, when I was growing up. So the desire to try to create that, you know, for our own children was very high on my list, and until I realized, I went, oh, that's just not possible. It's not going to happen.
Well, and the things that you just, you know, I was just saying this last night, all the things I'd hoped that I would never do as a parent, you know, it's Paul, I do the very things I would not do. And, you know, what is my hope? And there have been times when I have just, like, you know, before I go to bed and I'm praying and I'm just in despair over, like, how profoundly short of the mark I fall. And why should that be a surprise? Like, you know what I mean? On a certain level. And yet, you know, it's just so anguishing sometimes as a parent, because you realize the implications in a much more profound way, because you see it in your children and you realize that you're directly related to whatever they're struggling with on a certain level. And I you know, I think it's humbling, and you have to go to your children and say, I really blew it, and this is really not what I wanted to say. And I have felt like the Holy Spirit just really convicting my heart that they also have to learn to forgive. They also they live in a fallen world, and they have to learn to forgive me, and they have to learn to forgive each other, and, you know,
absolutely.
So on.
That is a line we say often. Will you forgive me? That was not my intention. You know, so it's one of those things that it's very humbling to have to say. It's wonderful to give, and they have to be taught the lesson too, just like we do.
That's right.
Do mothers do this comparative thing with looking at other mothers and how well their kids are turning out? And do you start to do some analysis of, maybe I need to work harder on Junior? Because
I don't know if I compare to other mothers. I think what's difficult in my situation in parenting, of what I found in myself, is being able to see my children's potential and seeing them for who I believe God has built them to be, and watching them not understand the beauty of that. And so encouraging them, inviting them into this opportunity to see themselves as different, as capable, when they are struggling. I think I've had more difficulty with that, is allowing them the struggle and allowing them to feel less about themselves, because I can't control their own identity. I can set a plate of and invite them into who God sees them as, well, who I see them as, and they have to take the first bite, you know. And so that whole process, I don't know if I compare to other kids more than it's, do you see how great you really are as an individual? You know, and why are we listening to the enemy that's trying to bring you down? You know, that's not who you are. So to me, it's more of an internal battle with that than it is looking at other people's kids, but I don't know.
For me, it's comparing myself to other moms. Mm. You know, I have a mom that is a good friend of mine who lives across the street. My friend Karen, who is like a Montessori teacher. And dispositionally, she's very demure and just this very open. I mean, she just, you know, this is a person who is anointed to teach, right? And so, you know, to watch her, and meanwhile, I'm like Sergeant Carter on Gomer Pyle, USMC. You know, I'm like, kids, get in the car. I mean, you know what I mean? I feel like I've always been this, you know, like the coach in the locker room kind of a thing. Like, what's the matter with you? You know, and to watch her and think, oh, I want to be like that. I want to be like that. How come I'm not like that? You know, and just, you know, a lot of that, surrendering that to the Lord and saying, Lord, I'm broken, but you know what? Just you know, praying that he would just use whatever's there to, you know, to his glory. So
I have a neighbor like that, and I ask the boys, well, not that she's a teacher, but her house is always perfectly clean, and like she always looks good.
Does she live in it?
Yes.
That's even weirder.
I was in a, Linda, if you're listening, you are going to so laugh at this, but I was in a mini triathlon with her, and she literally put on lipstick as we were coming up.
Oh, my goodness.
From our swim.
Wow.
So it was kind of, it's kind of one of these things that I talked to my boys. I'm like, do you wish you had a mom that would always had it together? And they start laughing. They're like, oh, we know that's not possible. And so they accept us the way we are. I don't know why we look for others, you know, to be that just like somebody else.
All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, more of the amazing and beautiful Queens of the Roundtable. If you have a question or an issue, let us know what it is. We'd love to talk about it, discuss it, grapple with it. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Got Rebecca and Michelle and Rosie in studio. We're ready for your questions. Back in 90 seconds. Welcome back to the show. It's 17 minutes after the hour. We are enjoying the beautiful and amazing Queens of the Roundtable. And I've got a question that just came in. Curious to hear what characteristics you find most important in a man. Not necessarily for marriage, just in general.
Mm. Who wants to go first?
Looking at me.
We're all looking at Rebecca. She's the newest married.
I think it's just, it's not necessarily for marriage, just in general.
Mm-hmm. I know that gentlemen really appreciate respect.
Yes.
In marriage, obviously, that's most important, but also in just regular interactions. I would say it's good to have a modicum of respect for people that we deal with. But when I look at gentlemen that I respect, there's a sincerity about who they are. They're not trying to fool the world into thinking that they're something they're not. They're comfortable enough to say, we've talked about forgiveness and asking for forgiveness when you mess up. And that can be very difficult, especially if you're in a leadership position and you're trying to maintain strong authority. But I appreciate guys that carry themselves with a confidence that say, I know who I am. And it doesn't depend on me being right all the time. Mm-hmm. That's not where my strength comes from. My strength comes from the Lord and having that identity in Christ and in who I am. And maybe they've walked in the world enough to know I'm going to make mistakes. But the important thing is that I keep obeying in the same direction. That definition of integrity is long obedience in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So I think I really appreciate that. Also, a sense of humor never hurts, because when you're dealing with me, there's plenty to laugh at. So that's really fun.
Okay.
And I like people in general that I can learn from. So somebody that has, you know, interesting things to say, that likes to think about the world, that likes to ponder things. So that's just fun to interact with.
All right. Anyone else want to take a stab at that one?
I would say
Michelle.
Yes, this is Michelle.
Yeah, I'm just trying to distinguish the voices.
And my voice, I have to apologize. I've having an allergic, you know, reaction here, so my voice is a little bit in the basement. But I think the really good listening skills and patience, because that's is required if you're a good listener, and the forgiveness piece. You know, that the three of them seem like they're pretty inextricably linked, that they kind of need to be. But mm-hmm. yeah.
I love men who break the barriers of what it means to be the stereotypical man. You know,
can you give us an example?
Just, I love, one of the things I loved about my husband when I met them, he cried more at our wedding than I did.
Wow.
And so just his ability to emote and to be authentic in those emotions and not have that question his manhood at all, I find that extremely attractive. So just, I think for me, it's transparency in who you are outside of the paradigm of what the world tells you you should be. Mm-hmm. And to me, that takes great strength. You have to be comfortable in your skin. You have to be understanding that what someone else tells you, how someone else tells you you fit a mold, shouldn't confine you. And that takes great courage. So those are the things that are very attractive as a masculinity trait to me. So quite opposite from I cut wood, you know, and right. I don't have any emotions, I don't think. Well, we all know that that's not
cutting
true.
Cutting wood can be very... No, I'm kidding.
Only if they've worked really hard.
And I have to say, I think that in fatherhood, that the desire to really be a covering over your family, to be protective and to be consistently mindful of your, you know, of your spouse and children, I think is a really noble and...
That's just downright sexy, though. I just said sexy on Faith Radio. I realized
I know that. But I mean, I got to tell you, I don't think that there's a woman I've ever met that hasn't in It's a Wonderful Life, when Jimmy Stewart is got Zuzu's petals and that moment where he's tucking her into bed, it's like, or when he's like, just, I mean, there's other scenes, but that most women go, oh, you know, I mean, that's the zinger. It's not Clark Gable without a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Though, you know, okay.
That's not bad either.
It's not entirely bad, but it's different. It's a deeper
We've
thing.
Gone off the rails, Bill.
All right.
Off the rails, you Faith Radio.
I can see that.
Strength and tenderness can go hand in hand.
Yes, they
that's
can.
That's it, yeah.
But it feels nice to be pursued all the time, correct?
Mm.
And or
all the time kind of scares me, Bill.
Not all the time.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but through all stages and ages of life.
Sure.
Yes.
The pursuant of us, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the appreciation.
Yeah.
Yes.
The appreciation. And that, you know, that there's just nothing as nice as being married 25 years and still have your husband come and say, you know, let's go out, let's go do this.
So you like planners?
Yeah, I don't. They don't have to be always a planner, but when it's organic and they've been watching your life and they say you need this, I mean, it's just being noticed.
Right,
that is so beautiful. It's filling, and I think that being noticed fills all the love languages.
Well, and if they're proud of you, I mean, I hate to say it in that way. I know that probably doesn't sound right. I'm sure
somebody's going to be writing it,
but I just mean that. When they're eager to have you be a part of something that they're doing, or to introduce you to somebody that they're, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you represent that better half thing, you know what I mean? That they really feel that way genuinely about you. So,
mm-hmm. What happens when a spouse is not talking about your spouses, but when a spouse is not walking with the Lord, and you're going to come alongside and counsel a friend? And the spouse is just like, yeah, not really interested in going to church anymore, and my language has gotten kind of rough around the house, and I'm irritable and angry. And you can just tell the person is not being accountable with other believers and is just not opening the Bible. And how do you deal with that? What do you say to your friends?
I have, I can maybe start there. That was Gary's in my relationship. I came to the Lord in the year 2000, and he came to the Lord in an active way in the year 2011. So we had 11 years of that exact scenario.
Well, I asked the right question then.
And so counsel a lot of women that are in this, or not just women, but that are in that position. And, you know, how the Lord walked me through is a deepening of my own faith in trusting him with the people I love. And I went to Scripture. The Lord was also my bridegroom in new ways that I had never expected during those 11 years. And what I had to learn is that I couldn't control my husband's walk. It wasn't going to look the same as mine, so I had to accept that. I had to be patient in that as the Lord came after me, he would come after my husband, because the prayers of the faithful avail much. And I just really had to trust him, even if I wasn't seeing it in with my eyes. What I did on my knees in prayer with the Lord was completely different. And so it's a long time. It can be a long waiting room. And when I walk with women in that on this topic, it's typically, let's continue to pray, because we have to let go of control that you could ever manage somebody's relationship with the Lord or invite them into that opportunity. That's completely the Lord's job.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and I would have to say this, that's 11 years for you. Mm-hmm. It was 30 years for me.
So. Oh my goodness. So you,
so my husband was raised in a very strong Christian household, but I think he suffered some setbacks, I guess, that I would characterize possibly as spiritual abuse. And at a certain point, we were both kind of, when we first got married, in that a similar place. But after a while, I had also felt like there was this very strong sensibility that that I was to that he belonged to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I just felt this sense of territoriality that the Lord had over him and over his walk, that it belonged to him and that I needed to love him the way the Lord loved him from an eternal perspective, that it wasn't just in relation to what was right for me on this earth. And, what about me? But it was like to love him from an eternal perspective and to pray in that way and to trust the other mandate that I felt like the Lord really gave me was that you do exactly what I tell you to do and you walk your walk and don't be apologetic about it, even remotely. But he's driving his own car, kind of that thing, you know, where there was that separate, that distinction. So I really try to say, I mean, I think that all of us, have that in parallels in our, friendships or marriages or whatever, where people don't always like continue to walk a walk of faith with the Lord. They go away, they deconstruct their faith, they whatever. And all we can do at those times is to continue to be faithful in our own walk and to pray, like you say, Rosie. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Any comments to that, Rebecca?
Well, without the personal angle, a quote from Elizabeth Elliot pops into my head. So when that happens, I have to say it.
Of course.
And she says, one of my favorites, she says, the fact that I'm a woman does not make me a different kind of Christian, but the fact that I am a Christian does make me a different kind of woman. And so I think just hopefully to encourage anyone in that situation to continue to live out your faith in the knowledge that God loves you and that relationship is complete. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to love you any more or less because of the relationship that your husband may or may not have right now. So your responsibility is to continue to walk faithfully with yes. Christ and to live that out in a daily way. Yes, you know, your husband can and will see that love through you. But first and foremost, your job is to serve Christ. And if you're doing that, then you're not a failure. You're not, don't put too much pressure on yourself in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll take a little break. We'd love to hear your questions. 877-933-2484. Again, 877-933-2484. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. We've got the beautiful and amazing queens of the round table. We've got Michelle and Rosie and Rebecca, and we're taking any question you might have, any issue you would like us to discuss, or I should say they will discuss. I'm just sort of funneling the questions. Here's one that came in from a listener. What do young Christian women look for in men when considering marriage? What should young men look for in women? Mm. Now you've got young kids, so.
Well, you know, I think about this because I think that first of all, there were some great comments that the men's roundtable had about women and men and women are attracted. How did that go?
Well, just a line from a movie. I think it was. It goes, men love women they're attracted to.
Yes,
and women are attracted to men they love.
Yes, and I think that's very true. I think that that there is an aspect of obedience, like, Lord, is this who you have for me? So there is that thing, because sometimes it's surprising that, you know, that if this is really who you have for me, it may not be all of the things that you've checked off in your mind, but there are some things. And I had a sister who told me, you know, to memorize 10 things you absolutely feel like you must have in a spouse, 10 things that you absolutely refuse to live with in a spouse. And, you know, it might be like physical abuse. I mean, you know, really serious things. And then 10 things that you're not happy, you know, like not crazy about, but you know you would live with, that you'd be flexible about, and memorize them. And then when you meet this person, the bells will go off. And one of the things that was really important to me was family. You know, I felt very strongly about somebody's background and how did they treat former relationships. Were they in forgiveness, and were they able to still be companionable with people they had been with previously in a relationship? And then the other thing was their history with people that were older.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how did they treat the elderly? And they're sometimes real hallmarks. They can really be telling about, you know, what their priorities are. And are they matured in that area of compassion and empathy in a sacrificial way? You know, it might be something as simple as, you know, holding a door open for somebody. You'll see these things, and they really are a mark sometimes of people's character. But that does not preclude, like, sometimes the Lord has, you know, led you to somebody that doesn't have necessarily all of the things, the bells and whistles that you think should be in place.
I have two boys. Those are beautiful, beautiful comments, because that's what I tell my boys, is watch more of who they are. People can say a lot of things about what they believe, but who are they in actual practice? And what we've told our boys, both Gary and I, is that what we've prayed about for our future daughter-in-laws is that she loves the Lord more than she will love you, and that she is complete in who she is in God, so that that she can stand in righteousness before the Lord, and that will make an amazing wife, because the Lord will work on her heart, because we're all in transformation. My goodness, I am so much different than the woman I was at 28 years old when I was married. Hopefully, you know, I have become more like the Lord each year, but goodness, at that time of 28, I wasn't at all. And so, but those natural attributes are there, those values that make you genuine. You have to, we tell the boys, you have to be able to see that woman as loved by God, and is she in a love relationship with him, so that she wants to walk in compassion, she wants to walk in goodness, she wants the fruit of her life to be peace, joy, love, goodness, kindness, gentleness, and self-control. And then the other thing, which is not really on the scale that we miss often, you have to be able to laugh. I'm like, laughter will get you. You have to be able to banter with that person. They have to entertain you intellectually, and you have to be able to be comfortable, because that is so important. You know, Michelle and I were talking, we've both gone through very difficult things, and laughter, and I know Rebecca has too. If you can't laugh with your spouse, you know, they have to have a similar base of looking at the world and laughing with it.
Mm-hmm. One of my guests, who's a psychologist and marriage counselor, said that's usually the first thing that leaves a marriage relationship is their ability to laugh together.
Mm.
They've stopped doing it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
We still laugh a lot around my office. I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Some of the jokes we make, and, you know, and they're heralded over the course of, like, the length of the entire relationship, which is fun too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Still funny 20 years later.
It's still funny, and you're still making that joke. Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, right.
You know? Right. Never gets old.
And there's a sense of familiarity and joy that comes with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To know it doesn't have to always be new and fresh and exciting and adventurous. I mean, some of that is good to shake things up as well. But I really appreciate the notion that understanding yourself as well as the other person, to know here's who I am and here's what I'm coming from and here are my strengths and weaknesses. And then I think you can better know the person that would complement you as you're going in the same direction toward life, because two can't walk together unless they're agreed. That doesn't mean about everything. I have discovered this early on in my marriage, but to know to know yourself and the type of person you are becoming, mm-hmm. and to know them and the type of person they are becoming, and that you're going together, committed to help one another in that same direction. And I will say, Michelle, you reminded me of one of the things that I first noticed and first loved about my future husband at that point, was that he saw people that the rest of the world didn't see. And he would see, you know, the World War II veteran with the cap kind of in the corner of the coffee shop, and he would go up to them and talk to them about their experience.
Yeah.
He would hold the doors open for people. He would talk to the little kids, maybe somebody in a wheelchair that was in the corner of the church that seemed like they were a little disconnected. He made a point of including them, and that was something that I really noticed. I thought, that is a great quality, and I want to know more about this guy. So that worked out for me. But I think it's knowing yourself well enough to know the type of person that you will mesh well with and will be able to work beside and to complement and just to have joy with.
And I've said over the years, we have the capacity to love a lot of people, but that doesn't mean that's who you're supposed to spend the rest of your life with and create a life with, you know, as far as a family, et cetera.
When we talk about humor and laughing together, and you think about the way relationships can develop kind of idiosyncratic language, which is very intimate, because you can make a grunting noise or say one word, and all of a sudden the whole family knows what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because it's so intimate.
Yeah, it's so true.
So to have that be a cultivated thing is probably something we should encourage, just because it's so intimate, isn't it?
Oh, it's so intimate.
There are words that can be said in your households that everybody knows what you're talking about,
right.
And the stranger would go, "I don't get it," right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes you connected. It's that private, that private connection line that allows you to feel like you are part of a group of something. And yes, inside family jokes, oh goodness, let's not talk about those, Bill. I would be in so much trouble, you would never let me be back on the show.
That's
I know.
True. Well, and I think that points to the intimacy when you are in such close quarters with, in over a period of and they see the sacred and the profane in your life, that you do the blessing and the richness of that is that you don't have to say anything. That's the music between the notes, that it's not just when the note happens, it's that there's this, what is connecting those two notes that people know in the silence, what is meant, and that there's comfort in the silence.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's talk about what does honor and respect look like with aging parents?
Mm. That is a tough one.
I'm sure it is.
It's tough because, honor and respect in the past. So I have my mom has passed 3 years now, and my dad is in a residence home. And so we have, and he was always the head of our house, over 10 children. My dad was the head. And so helping him into decisions without his spouse present and respecting his independence, yet knowing that he's not working with the same capacity, I've seen it work well, and I've seen it, kids turn into bullies with people that he is in relationship with at his residence home. And so it's a very delicate line, because sometimes children have to make some decisions that perhaps their parents are not capable of making for themselves anymore, mm-hmm. and they may not realize that, but there's also opportunities where we can set the table for them to say, well, what would you like? What can we do? And take the time to invite them into knowing that their situation has changed, but they're still mom, they're still dad, and we want to help them walk out what they would like to have seen done. However, sometimes they can't get everything they want, just like we can't, And so I think it's delicate, but going into it with the heart of you want to remember the parent that they have been, and you want to honor that, but also you need to love them in a way that is protective if they're not in that same capacity mm-hmm. anymore.
I think that's really accurate. I think making yourself available to whatever needs they do have, recognizing where they are vulnerable and unable to self-advocate, and then mm-hmm. taking that up if you can in a respectful way. And then also the consistency issue, to understand if you have limitations, And there are other siblings who may have, you know, be more of a resource in a particular area than you are, either with time or maybe money or, you know what I mean, whatever that is. And to also, you know, invite, you know, to be aware of the that parts of the body aspect of their family, that, you know, because they created that family, right? So to be respectful to one another as siblings is, I think, a really important part of honoring your parents and being respectful to them. Because I think as a parent, I will say that I never realized how crushing it was for parents to see disunity between their children until I became a parent. And then I had a different sensibility about my siblings because of that. Yeah.
Parents just always want the siblings to get along,
they
don't
do.
They?
They really do.
They do.
Yeah.
That's what they love more than anything.
They do.
Just get along.
I tell my boys that all the time. I said, you know, friendships come and go, but God chose you two boys to walk through life together by blood. And so,
please come and talk to my child.
Well, and I pray for my future daughter-in-laws that they'll be friends, because that would keep those two. I mean, but that heart, that natural heart for your children to love each other and to walk through life, because we're always having our own mortality in view, right? We know that most likely, and not always, unfortunately, but most likely, they will be here when we are gone, and you want them to love. I mean, that's the heart of a parent, is to have their children love each other and walk through life together.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back with more of the amazing and beautiful Queens of the Roundtable. We'd love to take your questions or your comments. Give us something to chew on, 877-933-2484. Rebecca, Rosie, and Michelle are the power panel today. Can't wait to get through this 90-second break and be right back. Show. It's 14 minutes till the top of the hour. The amazing and beautiful Queens of the Roundtable are here in the studio. We've got Rebecca, Rosie, and Michelle, and we're chatting about anything and everything. And if you have a question or something you'd like us to chew on, 877-933-2484. I'll give you that one more time. 877-933-2484. Is it hard work teaching your kids the principles of giving?
Wow. It starts early, doesn't it, Rebecca?
Say, you don't really have to teach a child to say mine.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know we have an 8-year-old in our house, and he's kind of the self-appointed fairness monitor between all the kids. So when you have a lot of kids, you have to learn to share. A lot meaning more than one. You have to learn to share. So we'll get some juice or something that needs to be shared, and he makes it his job to make sure that everybody has the same amount of juice in their cup.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's a justice thing or if that's I better make sure I have as much as everybody else. So he's a great guy, and I think God can use those characteristics, but it's kind of like, you know what, don't worry about the details of those types of things. You will have enough, and then they will have enough as well. And guess what? When we all look out for one another, then everybody has more than enough.
That's what
we're working on right now.
I would say, when they're younger like that, the first level of giving that you see is in the temporal realm, material things, right? And as a parent, I think it becomes part of your job to really observe, like, when something costs your child something. You know, if they've humbled themselves in some way, or if they've done something sort of out of the ordinary, that you know, you want to acknowledge, like, I really appreciate that you did that, because that's a form of giving that's a little more, it starts to enter, like, the emotional or spiritual realm, and you really want to have them understand that there's different types of giving that way and that it's all important. I remember, and I can't remember, Bill, if we talked about this when I was on your show previously, but the widowers might, you know, the parable, or it actually wasn't a parable, excuse me. It was an actual event that occurred, and she gave all that she had, and that struck me at a very young age. It really hit me between the eyeballs, like, wow, that the Lord acknowledged that it wasn't the amount that she gave, but that she gave all that she had. So it didn't matter that she didn't have a lot by the world standards. What he looked at was that it cost her something and she gave mm-hmm. out of that lack. That's actually the harder thing to do. So, yeah.
Well, and it's all part of conversation, right? Because we don't get to that finish line very easily. And I remember teaching one of my sons how to tie his shoes, and we taught that lesson like 50 times for about a week, you know, and you would think, okay, do we have it? And he would have it, and then he would lose it, and then we'd have to do it again. And I think giving both financially and spiritually and emotionally is a taught muscle. It's not something that naturally is very strong. And so because we are selfish in nature. Mm-hmm. And so for us and our family, yes, we did the save, spend, share drawers with their allowance, but absolutely the higher order is to give spiritually to others, and you want that for them. You want them to have, because they're going to have to give in marriage, they're going to have to give in their job, they're not always going to be recognized, and to sacrificially allow someone else to succeed over yourself sometimes, I mean, that's a giving, and it's just, to me, it's something that we work on all fronts all day long.
Yeah. You know, and it's replacement.
It is.
It's replacing fear with trust, and mm-hmm. it's replacing self-focus with others' focus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And those are lessons I need to keep relearning on a daily basis. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
So it's good to be able to share with others, but I also need to focus on learning those lessons myself and relearning them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Are you dreamers? Do you ever wonder what God might be putting in your path that would be like a big dare? Like,
oh my goodness.
All the time.
If I don't ask God to participate in this, I am toast. Mm-hmm. Not the good kind.
I have to say that...
burnt?
You know...
Extremely burnt.
I think that... I mean, you, as a person who's created a show, you know that whole birthing process, because you are, you know, producing something that is, like, beyond you, and there's no way that if it were just up to you alone, like, you could have done it, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you would say that, Bill. And having done the same thing... That there is the whole part of creative work, and you know that demands a dream. And I think about the scripture, without a vision, my people perish. Like, how important it is to have a vision, but to have God's vision. Sometimes, though, I feel like He asks for our obedience, and He doesn't really necessarily give us an end result in mind. Like, it's going to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, do this, now do this, now this door is opened and go here. And you do these things, and it's amazing to see the end result. And you look back at it, or you look at what you have at the end, and you say, wow, I could have never have come up with this of my own accord or my own, you know, skill set. And so you really see God's fingerprints all over it. And it's so exciting because you realize how personal God is. So I think that's as much a part of sort of what we traditionally think of as dreaming, you know, of having a vision and coming to the end of that versus, you know, being obedient and trusting that God is sovereign and He's going to bring you to something that's beyond your wildest dreams.
Mm-hmm. I think, and at the root of what prevents us from dreaming and going after those dreams is, I think you have to die to people pleasing. So if you are a person who is tied in at, because we all are tied into people pleasing at some point in our life, because we have to cut that free. If you're still tied
into comfortable, I think.
Right, and failure. And mm-hmm. so uncomfortable and trusting that the Lord could take you on a different route.
Right.
And none of your friends are doing that. And so with their opinions of it, you have to have obedience and trust above the opinion of somebody else, and that takes maturity. So there's so many, yes, I dream, yes, we all dream, and whether we walk in that obedience to go for that dream, I think is clearly defined to how much we trust God and how much we are no longer looking at other people for our affirmation.
One of the things that I'm learning about dreams is not to get too caught up in timelines about what it will look like or when it will be.
Right.
I think the things that I regret, the steps that I regret not taking in my life had to do with fear that either I wouldn't be good enough at it, so that couldn't possibly be what God has for me, or that I'll try it and then I'll fail. And if I don't have it done by this time, that constitutes failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I don't have these pieces in place in my life at 25 or at 30, and I don't know where I got those ideas, just for the record, but I
Brady
think
Bunch.
Those, well, sure, where all good ideas come from, right, Alice?
Right.
That those are the types of ideas that I think the world puts into our head, and even our enemy puts into our head, to say, see, that's why you really shouldn't take that risk, or that's why you shouldn't listen to what you think God is telling you to do, and that's why you shouldn't act on your strengths or grow your strengths or reach out outside of your comfort zone and try something new. And that's, I think about Hebrews chapter 11 and 12, and it talks about the great faith of the people that have come before us. And it's these folks are men and women that kind of reach legendary status in our minds. But when you think about it, they were real people.
Well, think of Moses, and, you know, you got to love that. I mean, how old was he when he was finally called to leadership? And he had all these other, you know what I mean? I mean, he was in a kingdom household, right? And what a story. But and in the very end, he struck the rock twice. You know, we talk about that, like, you know. But the point just being that we can just know in terms of the timeline thing that God's timing is not ours, but the work that He's begun in us, He will not let go unfinished. And then the other thing, that everything the enemy has intended for evil, God can use for good.
Mm-hmm.
So He turns it around. And so those things that you feel like are just slash and burn or laying in ruins on the side of the road, and think, oh, I really blew that, and that's gone. It's like, well, no, you don't know. You don't know what the end result's going to be. We don't know. And so that obedience factor is a big deal, you know.
Huge.
All right.
Bill, your turn to talk on your show.
I don't know if I'm ready. We only got a couple minutes left, so I'm going to run this by you real quick. Listener, my wife doesn't like herself. She's kind and hardworking and faithful, but she doesn't make herself vulnerable to others to create real friendships. She's always having an excuse not to go to lunch or coffee with someone. I've tried hard to encourage her to connect, but she doesn't think anyone wants to be around her. I want to help her, but I'm probably not the one. Any thoughts?
Oh, boy. That's just, those are the lies when we talked earlier in the show that just break my heart when the enemy is speaking into my kids, you know, that they're not enough or no one's going to be interested. And I'm a huge proponent, for one, for this listener, yes, he is the one. If he's married, yes, he is the one. He was given that mantle to walk with her in love and in support in the institution of marriage, and God honors that. So, yes, he does have a huge part of it. But also, you know, there's all sorts of roots. Matthew 15:13 says, you know, the Lord says, all plants not planted by God shall be uprooted. So wherever that root is coming from of self-loathing or I'm not enough needs to be addressed. And to encourage, I'm a huge proponent of counseling, Christian counseling, and mining for where pain and wounds might come into play. And I know our world is becoming more welcoming to that. It used to be counseling. I don't need counseling.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? But now... I think, you know, for goodness sakes, encourage going to counseling with her and finding, or is she really not sad? Is she okay with this? Is she introverted and she's okay?
I was thinking the same thing.
And are you not okay? I mean, those questions have to be asked too. Like, is she really okay with not having a whole lot of female friends and going out for coffee? Not everybody's built the same.
Right, exactly. And I was also thinking of, like, it's possible that she has a wounded spirit. And there's something in her past that is just like that it's a trigger, you know, for her to go out with other people. But also, you know, the idea that that she might be an introvert and she just likes to be alone. It's a possibility.
Yeah. Thank you so much, ladies, for an amazing time of
talk, Bill.
Around the studio here. That wraps up our show. Thank you so much for the guys for showing up in hour one and the amazing and beautiful Queens of the Roundtable in hour two. It's been a great day. If you've missed any of the show, you're going to want to hit rewind and go to myfaithradio.com. You can check out the podcast. And as you lay your head on that pillow tonight, just know that God is working out His great plan in your life. He loves you. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.